Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming to Theology on Tuesday. Go ahead and grab a seat. Thank you all for coming out tonight. If this is your first time, welcome. My name is Justin Hare. And this is Brian McGreevy. And we're super excited for tonight. We've been talking about the topic of friendship for some time. A worthy topic to discuss.
Indeed.
Oh, you've got a lot more volume than I do. That's good. All right. But just a few things in terms of how the evening goes. So you'll see these little sheets around the room. They're important. The top QR code is the way that you can submit any question. Our second half of the evening is devoted to just answering any of the questions that come your way. Do we have a moderator?
We have Hugh.
Hugh!
All right.
Thank you, Hugh. Okay, yeah, he's not here, but he knows that we love him. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting. All right, there we go. I'm sure it's going to be just fine. But what Hugh will do is he will look at all the questions that come in, and you can see the questions that other people submit as well, like the ones that you're interested in, and that will kind of uptick them, and he'll be able to pose those questions to us, and we'll do our best to answer as succinctly as we can. And yeah, again, that's the top QR code that's there. If you want to join our email list and just stay up to date on the various activities that we do, you can join our email list by scanning that bottom left QR code. There are a couple of announcements tonight. One is Chris Walcheski, who is right here always doing our sound for us. Thank you, Chris.
Woo!
But he is the director of music and choir at St. Philip's Church, which is the church right down the street where we are. And there are a number of folks here who have been kind of revamping our choral evensong. Who here knows what choral evensong is?
Woo.
Yeah, awesome. And there are a number of folks who are involved. It's a really unique thing. Brian, do you want to say a word about what choral evensong
is? Yeah, so choral evensong is a really cool ancient church service where there's chant and anthems and all of that. It goes all the way back to the days of the temple in Judaism, where when the sun would be going down, they would come in to light the lamps. And so there would be chant and singing that went with that. And then in the Christian faith, that came early on into what was called the service of Vespers. And then in the 1500s, a uniquely English service started called Evensong. So if you're in England, any cathedral you go to in England has Evensong. It's rare in the United States, but it's beautiful. It's a very contemplative service. There's silence, there's this chant, there are anthems. It's just a great way to sort of take a step out of the frenetic pace of the world and just bask in a more transcendent atmosphere.
Yeah, and so are there many downtown here?
No.
Okay.
It's very rare. And one thing you may not know is St. Philip's Choir is actually kind of famous. St. Philip's choirs have sung in Notre Dame in Paris, at St. Paul's Cathedral in London, in Canterbury Cathedral, at the Vatican, in the Duomo in Florence. It's basically like being an Olympian in the choral world. It is not to be taken for granted that there's something like that right here.
Yeah. And if this is your first time, this may sound very self-serving. We really don't care where you go or if you go to church. We'd love for you to join our church. But we've got a number of churches represented. Ours just happens to be a very, very old building that they don't really make many like that anymore.
Yes.
And so we want to steward that well. We want to invite people into it. And Choral Evensong's once a month. It's a great way to check out something very different.
That's by candlelight.
By candlelight, which is really neat. Kind of in that same vein, there's a number of folks I've talked with who are interested in learning how God has gifted them. Maybe that has to do with your vocation. What is my calling in life? A lot of that can be tied to what are the gifts that God's given you? And you'll see on the bottom right here, it says sign up for a spiritual gifts workshop. That's one of the things that we offer periodically at St. Philip's. And it's a great way, if you're ever curious about what are the ways that God has bestowed his unique gifts upon me. This is a Friday and a evening and a Saturday morning devoted to helping folks learn those specific things. And so, again, you don't have to go to St. Philip's to check that out, but we would encourage you, if those are things that resonate with you, go ahead and give it a shot. Check it out. You might be pleasantly surprised. And then finally, those who come to Theology on Tuesday, outside, because this is every other Tuesday, outside of that time, folks have wanted to get together. And we have this thing called Holy City Life, which is a group of young adults like yourselves who really just want to have some fellowship opportunities outside of this time. You can join that group by scanning the bottom QR code there at the very bottom right, or just by talking to Meredith. I saw Alexandra somewhere. There she is. You sit in a different place tonight. Awesome. All right, well, I think that's all the announcements that we have. And we've talked, well, what have we talked about so far in friendship?
So the first, and if you haven't been here before, we are in the midst of a four-part series on friendship, and we are doing that because, in case you didn't know, by every measure, there is a friendship crisis going on in our culture right now that you could also say is a loneliness crisis. So our first one, we talked about a lot of dimensions of friendship, looking at a book by a guy named Vaughn Roberts that was really excellent that we would commend to you, that kind of gives a framework for thinking about friendship. Then last week we talked about insights from C.S. Lewis on friendship, not only from his writings, but also from the way he lived his life. Lewis was kind of famous for the quality of his friendships. And so that brings us to this evening, where we are going to talk about some barriers to friendship, things that maybe people don't often think about that make it hard to develop good friendships.
Yeah, so as we think about what are the things that get in the way, the obstacles we face towards having the kind of friendships I think that we long for, I thought about something back when I lived in Clemson. I was a college minister there, and I had two young children at the time. They were like 1 and 3. And my job, because my wife had to get to school early in the morning, my job was to get them to preschool. And I remember waking up, and I couldn't get them there on time, and it was maddening. And so what would I do? I would get up 30 minutes earlier and start it, the whole thing a little bit earlier, and guess what? I still didn't make it there on time. I kept doing that till it was ridiculous. It was like 4 hours in the morning before they were supposed to be there. I couldn't get them there. So I said, I'm going to try the night before, iron their clothes, get everything ready. I still couldn't get them there. And the point is, the problem was not the preparation on the front end of their clothes or getting them dressed. The problem was the relational dynamic, both in how I communicated and their willingness to listen to what I said. That was the issue. That was the real barrier. And it's like the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Until you actually diagnose the real problem, it really doesn't matter how hard you work at it until you are mitigating the right obstacles, until you're working against the things that are the real barriers. So tonight, what were some of the barriers? I mean, there's a lot of barriers, I think, today. Where do you want to start as we think about the things that make friendship today hard?
Yeah, so I think there's so much to talk about here, and part of it is that I think a lot of us make the assumption that friendship should just happen. It should be one of those things that's just sort of natural. It should just happen. We shouldn't really have to work at it. But the fact of the matter is that is just not the way that it works. And one of the problems that I think many of us have, I think, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I think most of us would agree that we could probably improve not only the quality of our friendships, but maybe the number of our friendships and our investment in them. And I think part of the issue is that our attitude toward friendship, a lot of times it's sort of like our New Year's resolutions about getting in shape. So at the beginning of the year, you're like, oh, this is going to be the year. I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to start getting up at 5 a.m. and going to the gym for an hour every day. And you might be like really motivated for a week, and then you're like, I'm not doing that. And it just stops. And part of it is because your goal and your plan were totally unrealistic. But I think for many of us, we don't really have a plan about friendship. We have kind of this idea, it would be better if I had better friendships. But we don't like have a plan or really even a vision of where we're trying to get to, much less a roadmap of how we're going to try to get there. So I think that's sort of the first step, is realizing is that, as the book said, that friendship is crucial. Friendship is not a nice to have. It is something that is crucial for walking through your life, and particularly if you're a Christian, it's a scriptural command to be in good, deep friendship with other believers. So it is an area that deserves some attention.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not even being aware necessarily of the things that are coming at us, both from without and within, that make it difficult. So having more than just a good old try to make, you have to, like New Year's resolutions, totally take an audit of your life in terms of what are your habits, what are you really applying yourself to? That's a reflection of what you really love. And until your time aligns with what you really want your time to be devoted to, it's really kind of foolish to think that much is going to change until you've devoted your life to look and align with the things that you deeply care about the most. One of the things that I thought about in terms of challenges that make friendship difficult today is just the reality. We mentioned this before, but some of the environmental changes that have happened just in the last 2-3 decades, that sort of thing, both with technology, the rise of smartphones, and now we have so much information. We are so much, there's so much connectivity, both social media and the appearance of relationships and depth, which is really kind of a pseudo depth. It has the appearance of that, but it's not really true friendship. And then you also have the fact that work is now following us around in our pockets. For most of us, we have email, we have our work obligations that follow us around on our smartphones. But I think also when you think about the very the nature of our society today is so different. If you think back hundreds of years ago, there was far less mobility. There was far, you pretty much knew what you were going to do, and like the 12 people that were marriage options, like in your village. That was kind of the way it was going to go. And now with
some of them might be your cousins.
Well, yeah, that's just the way it was, yeah. Because you lived where you lived. And now with, don't overlook the importance of the steam engine. I think that's always an important thing, like being able to travel long distances. It sounds silly, but the very first time people were like, I don't like this church, I'm going to try another church in another town. You can't do that unless you have the technological means by train or car to do that.
Yeah.
Now we think it's nothing, and I think this is one of the things that we see is so often in our technologically advanced, both with cars and travel, and the prosperity that goes along with that. Now we have not only options, but it's like almost assumed, boy, you should have a social life where you're going, 5-10 weeks out of the year to weddings or in various places or traveling. And by the way, that has an effect on your relationships. And that's the biggest thing that most people have no idea about, is the very nature of our society, and particularly the prosperous society that a lot of us find ourselves in. Because we have the access to do it, we think we should do it. And nevertheless, our friendships, our relationships suffer unbeknownst to us.
Yes, I think that's exactly right. And part of the problem is that if you really want to have good friendships, it takes work. And it takes making those friendships a priority. And one of the things that I think is really difficult if you're really busy, I think if we asked, are you really busy, every person in this room would probably raise their hand. If you're really busy, it is very hard to take a step back and think about, am I really being intentional about my friendships? And I think if you were being intentional about friendships, what that would look like is you would set a particular amount of time aside each week that is devoted to certain friends. You would have prayerfully discerned, these are the people that I believe God is calling me to invest myself in friend-wise, and I'm going to plan and get things on the calendar with those people so that as I move through this next couple of weeks, I know that I'm going to have these times with friends as I go through. But in fact, what usually happens is we don't do any of that. Our social life is determined by who happens to send us a text at the moment that we happen to be free, and we end up defaulting to hanging out on Upper King Street, going to bars, which sometimes can be fun, But if that's all you're doing, you're not going to really build friendships that way. And you're letting other people sort of control who you're hanging out with. And that versus the intentionality that we talked a little bit about C.S. Lewis's example last week or last time. One of the things that was amazing about him is he's super busy, you know, professor in the top university in the world, teaching all these classes, lecturing, writing books, running a household, all these things. And yet he had three times every week that were carved out just for his friends. Tuesday mornings, Thursday evenings with his group of friends, and then one morning a week just with his friend Tolkien. And he did that week after week after week for years. And the result of that is he had these incredible friendships. But for most of us, if you're like me, you maybe have some friends where you're like, yeah, we really need to like get coffee and catch up. And then 6 months goes by and you see them and you're like, yeah, we really need to get coffee and catch up. And then 6 months goes by. That's not being intentional about friendship.
Yeah. And along with that, I think one of the things that stands out is we have to... Oh, my train of thought just completely went away.
Well, I have one.
Yeah, why don't you... I was like, wait a minute.
Well, that comes back. Yeah. So one of the other things that's important is that if you really are concerned about trying to develop good friendships, part of it means you have to put yourself out there. You have to take some initiative. And that can be really hard because especially if you've been working and you're exhausted, it's so much easier to just order takeout or DoorDash of some sort and then turn on Emily in Paris or whatever your thing is. And you know, imagine if that was what your life was like. That's sort of depressing if you step back from it and look at it. But the fact of the matter is, if you would try to plan, I know this is really hard, but trying to plan in advance is part of the key. Because if you decide, like on Sunday, okay, I'm going to try to make some plans for this coming weekend, and you invite some people to come to your house for dinner on Friday night, you've already invited them. And so regardless of how your week goes and how busy it is, you know on Friday night these people are going to show up. So you've got to be there. And that actually is really good because that is how you build relationship. And the context is another thing that's really important because you can make plans to be with people, but I'll just say like in our friendship, if all we ever did was to like go to the Barbie movie together like we did.
Watch Emily in Paris together and like we always
yes,
did.
Yeah. And we never actually talked to each other. We just sat on the sofa or in the movie seats next to each other, and then we got up and left, or we went to a bar together and were so entranced by how great the music was, but we never talked to each other. Being in proximity in the same place does not create a friendship. You have to be able to actually talk to each other.
That's right. About substantive things, about things that really matter, and that's... So my train of thought came back to me. There was like three trains of thoughts. That's why I lost them. So what friendship really
is,
right?
That's why you're so great, Justin.
Oh, man. No, it had to do with like the calendar, which is like a big deal. Many people, if you don't have a calendar, a lot of people think, I don't know if I'm quite there yet. That sounds too adulting. But like the reality is it's a tool that, yes.
It gives you freedom.
It gives you freedom. Yes. It helps you to live into the things that you, and like it's... It's almost sad to consider how much time, I mean, it's not sad, I enjoy doing it, but the time that I spend with young adults who really, it's like just coaching them to basically get their lives in order and figuring out how to have a day timer, how to have, whether it's on your phone or whatever, it's a tool, right? To help you be able to prioritize and live into the things that you actually want to. And until, like I said earlier, your life matches what you say your priorities are, you're not going to be able to enjoy that.
And that's
going to
create anxiety.
It's going to create anxiety. Yeah. But also what friendship actually is, right? We didn't even define that yet. If you haven't been here, it's having the common interest together, being shoulder to shoulder, looking at something else, not just, I want a friend so badly. And I love Lewis, who like has hard words for people who just, all they want is just this companion, and they want it so badly that they're focused only on this person.
You mean
person.
Where he says they're pathetic?
He calls them pathetic, and I think that's awesome. But he says it's friendship is about something else. And there's a scale, right, of what your interest that is shared can be. It can be enjoying music and being out in a place, but as you alluded to, until you're getting at the actual heart of the other person, and I think guys and girls are slightly different in how you do this, but still the same goal is I want to know what you're thinking, what mm-hmm. how you're reacting and responding to things, what your values are. And there's strategies to get at some of those. But by the way, doing that in a bar or at a concert or at a movie, even at a Theology on Tap, this is why we love this environment, but it's never the end goal because you can only go so deep in a place like this.
Yeah.
That's why we love small groups, Bible studies, meeting outside this time. So where and how you do that is critically important to foster friendships.
And one of the things that also is really important, if you are used to running with a pack of people, that's great in some ways, but you are never going to develop depth in your friendship if you don't have one-on-one time with people. Because what creates depth in friendship is taking your mask off, being willing to be vulnerable, being willing to say, I'm struggling with this, or this is something that I don't understand that I would love to talk through with you, and just, I would love for you to just listen and tell me what your thoughts are about this. Those kind of conversations don't happen when there are 10 people, you know, at the poorhouse or wherever you might be. It's just not going to happen. So you have to have that one-on-one time, and you have to learn to be able to ask questions of the other person. We're going to talk about that in our next session, about ways to deepen a friendship. But those one-on-one times are really, really important. And that willingness to be able to take a risk to share things about yourself that are hard or that you're struggling about, that is where depth and friendship can actually come.
And I think that is one of the major obstacles, is this reluctance to be vulnerable, probably for a number of reasons. But I think we now live in a time where we have the illusion of control probably more than anything else, the quality of life. All of these things shape our willingness, I think, to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. The fact that we can do almost anything we want in the timing that we want, and all it takes is just a swipe on a screen to be able to fixate on whatever we want. Those things shape you. They create a character that is pretty weak, honestly. Mm-hmm. You're not risking much in the way the world naturally goes. And vulnerability does take a substantial amount of risk. You have to risk being hurt and wounded, at least emotionally, right? And so the reticence to actually go out there and be vulnerable. And then sometimes friendships don't work because you know that's important, and then you don't have the discretion of how to be vulnerable in the right context.
Yep.
And that's equally as important, I think.
Yeah. And I think another thing that relates to this, and this again is something where our culture and things that have happened just trend-wise in the past couple of decades make this so much more difficult, but there used to be all sorts of contexts for meeting people, whether it was in your job or whether it was when you were going to Rotary Club or Garden Club or your sports team that was your amateur sports thing. So much of that is just gone out of our culture now, and so they're not these natural places. And the other thing that's gone is there used to be a lot of opportunities to develop what I would call multi-generational friendships, where you would be exposed to people who are younger than you are, older than you are, in a way that you could develop a real friendship with them. And so friendships now, we tend to think people have to be exactly like us, right in the same demographic. And that is really unfortunate, because part of the way that you learn and grow is by being with people who are older, people who are younger, people who are from a different country, you know, whatever it might be. But finding that same truth that you share, that same thing that you're interested in, but being able to look at it through somebody else's eyes.
It's a great point you make about how society's changed with guilds and places where you could just bump up against folks. And it was part of the DNA to basically strike up a conversation. That doesn't really happen. I think there's still, I mean, the church actually is one of those places mm-hmm. that's still kind of an oddball of an institution that's multi-generational where you can meet people. But by and large, there's like, okay, a pub or a bar, that's one of the places that's not ideal. a gem or a common interest, like if people like to play sports or pickleball or whatever it is, like I've met, you know, people who strike up relationships there. But think about this, if you go to the gym, how many people have earbuds in, right? Or anywhere that you go, I think, so this is already I'm beginning to fix. Let's overcome this barrier of proximity and vulnerability. One of the things that I might suggest very practically, and I think there's real sacrifice in this. I feel this at home. One of the things I love to do when I'm doing the dishes, we put the kids to bed, is I will listen to a podcast. I put my earbuds in. Usually my wife will come out after putting the last child to sleep, and I'm still just going to town on the dishes. But think about what that communicates, that my earbuds are actually in.
Right. It's not interested in talking to you.
I am not here for you. Yep. I'm not here for you. And if you are looking for friendships, be thinking about how you are presenting, even with something as small as earbuds. That is a strong communicator of, I'm not here for you.
Right.
And to think, well, if I do want to be open to that, that's one practical way that I know a lot of people are like, I would never go to the gym and not listen to music. It's like, well, think of all the places that you could possibly meet people. They're not that many anymore.
Right.
So something to consider.
Yes. And I think one of the things that can be difficult in this whole arena is that as we are thinking about friendship, so often we have what I think of as the elementary school playground understanding of friendship, that you just sort of run into people, and because you keep running into them, those are the people that are going to be your friends. And that's not always bad to be friends with people that you run into. I'm not saying that. But I think that, again, thinking about who are the people in your life, that those people help you to be a better person. One of the things that Justin and I were talking about earlier today that's kind of been lost is there used to be, particularly in classical literature and early Christian literature, this understanding that part of friendship was about virtue, and that part of the reason that you had friends was to help you be better. And so considering who are the people in your life that you want to be more like that person, or there's something about that person that you admire, making an effort to pursue those people in friendship can be a way to develop some intentionality that will bring some good fruit.
Yeah, friendship is a training ground for virtue and character. That assumes that, and this is an important barrier too that we haven't talked about, it assumes that we're not virtuous, that our character is not exactly
and
great.
And that we need help.
And that we need help.
Right.
And I think many people are reluctant to admit their own selfishness and sin, where the Bible teaches us that we're often blind to our own sinful desires and our hearts. And one of the things that is an obstacle to friendship is we lack the courage, because of self-preservation or whatever, to actually speak the truth to those that we care about in our friends. Or we find out, oh goodness, we're two sinners who come together, we have conflict all of a sudden, and conflict must mean we're not really good friends. And I think that's a myth, actually. Mm-hmm. When you enter into conflict, it just means that you're a living, breathing person who has a different desire, and it's working through that conflict that is really what friendship is all about. You're going to hurt each other. Actually, the closer you get, the more you're going to see the selfishness of the other person. One of the key important goals, I think, for true friendship is not only being aware of what's really going on in each other's lives, but having the courage not to just draw into yourself, but to speak the truth in love. And we'll talk about strategies for that. I'm sure there'll be questions for that tonight. But I think that's a serious barrier that people have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think so often, this is another one of those areas where social media has been so bad for us. Because if you get into a situation where you are having a comment war with someone on social media, if that person just really gets on your last nerve, you can just block them.
Unfriend.
You don't have to talk to them. Yeah. You don't have to do anything. You're just like, I'm done. Forget that. But that is such an unhealthy model of dealing with another person. And so the model, instead of thinking about, I need to have a hard conversation with this friend, or there's something where I have done something that I need to apologize to this person for, and taking the initiative to do that, and also practicing forgiveness. One of those great proverbs that's attributed to like 30 different people, no one really knows who said it, is unforgiveness is like drinking poison yourself and hoping it kills your enemy. And I think there's a deep truth in that, that so often we get hurt or annoyed or angry at a friend, and rather than forgive them, we just distance ourselves and we spend a lot of time stewing about how bad that person is. Whereas in fact, if we were to take the initiative and say, you know, I'm really concerned about what happened here, can we talk through this? That means that you might actually break through into growth and deeper love for each other.
And I think all this stems to the fact that so much of our world is transactional, people are viewed as commodities, and true friends, I think Lewis talked about this, but they're a gift. You mm-hmm. can't buy them.
Right.
You can't construct, they're a gift that comes to you. Not everybody is going to be willing to enter into a relationship like that. Mm-hmm. So when you have that, when you have somebody who's open to it, that's something to be treasured.
Yes.
And something to thank God for, and it's worth working at it mm-hmm. for. But I think also the barriers, we just live in a commodified culture that treats everything as, well, I can just go find it somewhere else because I have either the time or the money to, yeah. to do that. And you can't.
Right, so. Right.
Any concluding thoughts you have before we go to questions?
I would just go back to the very first point that we made in the very first part of this series, which is friendship is crucial. And if you're not convinced of that, you're not going to do anything that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But I am really convinced of that. If you want to talk about whether it's crucial or not, talk to Justin or me. We'll be happy to work on trying to convince you. But I think that that aspect is so important. We were not created to do life alone. And when you walk through life in the company of friends who you know love you, who want what is best for you, who are going to speak the truth and love to you when you are screwing up, there is a comfort and joy in that that is like no other.
And be gentle with those who speak into your life. If you've given them permission, it's really easy to get defensive and to just remember that you have somebody who cares enough. Even if they've maybe overstepped and said something that could have been phrased better, be thankful that you have, I love the proverb, faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuses are the kisses of an enemy. A true friend is willing to wound, not to harm, but to heal like a surgeon would.
And to help you be your best self.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, did Hugh come back? Yeah, thank you, Hugh. All right. Didn't know what we were going to do without you.
So do we have a lot of questions from the other room?
Yes, you do. Got to turn on, Hugh.
Hello?
Hello?
Okay. Hey, there you are.
Hey, everyone. So, if you haven't already, go ahead and find a paper around the room with a QR code. From there, you can submit anonymous questions, and I'll be reading out the top of the questions. So, the first one is, how should a husband and wife maintain their friendship?
Oh, that's a great question.
That is a really good question. So I think there are a number of things there, some of which may seem really obvious, but once you are married, you realize this is not as easy as it seems. One thing is you have to spend time together. It is really easy for husbands and wives not to spend time together because you get busy and caught up in a lot of things. The other thing that I think is really important is having strong friendships outside your marriage, because that will give you things to bring back into your relationship, things to talk about, things to share about. Developing interests together, serving in ministries together, for example, traveling together, reading books together and talking about them, inviting people into your home together. All of those kinds of things build relationship. What you don't want to do is say, okay, we've got two TVs, and so you go watch Emily in Paris and I'm going to go watch the Gamecocks. And, you know, that's just what you do. That is not going to build your friendship.
This is a loaded question. There's so much to it. I'm excited. This is the book that we're going to look at next week called Transformative Friendships. And it basically says, here's a very simple way of asking good questions. I think that's a key to maintaining your friendship in marriage. I think, by the way, marriage is fundamentally a friendship.
Yep.
It's certainly more than that, but it is at its very root an exclusive but deep, deep friendship.
Yep.
And it can be easy to turn into roommates who are accomplishing a lot of tasks. It can be easy, particularly when children come and you've got a lot that you have to do. But it can be easy as well, you know, you've got to have a balance of activities and time apart so you don't smother one another. But also, you need to connect. You can't just be totally disconnected, doing your own thing, doing whatever you want, and there only for whatever kind of benefits you receive from the other person.
Yeah.
A friendship fundamentally sees the heart of another person. It has curiosity and care for what's going on in their lives. That's one of the things that I find fascinating is...
Wow. That is an example
from
of
your
friendship.
Secret admirer.
Thank you, Clark and John.
That was awesome. Now I definitely lost my train of thought.
We can go to the next question.
It was really good. Basically, asking good questions and wanting to know what's going on. And the reality is like people change a lot given the seasons of life. And you're never going to fully discover, you're never going to reach the depth of how the other person thinks and feels and values. And so one of the keys, I think, is just developing this skill of asking really insightful questions, listening well, and exploring life. But fundamentally having a curiosity and a care for the other person is really important.
Yeah, and that's true in any friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great question.
How to healthily maintain friendships with non-Christians who we love and care about, but they definitely aren't following Jesus?
That is a great question also. I think that it's really important to be friends with people who are not Christians as well as with people who are Christians. I have a pretty fair number of friends who are not Christians. They obviously know that I am a Christian. If you wear this around, it's kind of a giveaway. But they still want to hang out. And so I don't feel like when I hang out with them that I need to bring my Bible and say, all have sinned.
You.
This means you. That's not really helpful. But what is helpful is to find things that we both love, just like we've talked about with friendship in general. Whether that be poetry or whether it be Lord of the Rings. There are all sorts of things that people who are not Christians are interested in that Christians can be full-on interested in as well and share the joy of that together. And so I think finding things to do like that are important. And I think it's important to invite people into your own ground, as it were. So for example, if you have, like I have some friends that partake in various things that I would not partake in, I'm not gonna go do that with them. That would not be a good thing. But they completely get that. And so we need to be on territory that we're both comfortable with. So, and I think just loving those people and praying for them, I have some really great friends who are not believers, and one of the things that you will find is sometimes over a really long period of time, the person that you never thought would come to Christ does, just like all of a sudden.
Yeah. It's such a good question. I think you hit the nail on the head. This is a lost art of people think that, oh man, if they're really different from me, then we can't really be close friends. And that's one of the major errors, right? Is like, you're going to be different from a lot of people. That's what makes life worth living in many ways, is being able to see different perspectives. And it's probably wise, as you said, to start with the things that you do have in common. And over time, you begin to hear, okay, why you believe what you believe about other things. Mm-hmm. And a true friend's not going to force you to do something that you're not comfortable right. with. They're going to honor your convictions. They should. Mm-hmm. So I think being clear on what you are willing to do and what you're not willing to do, and a friend's going to honor that. So absolutely, we should have friendships that are with non-Christians. I think there's another error, too, of I've often heard from folks who are like, well, I'm going to just have a whole bunch of missional friendships, and I'm in 24/7 really bad environments, and you don't realize that that actually does something to
really
you.
Really bad idea.
It shapes what you love in a way that's not helpful, and so you can go in both extremes, I think, in that direction. So being on guard with that, but the importance is, man, being able to, I mean, friendship in many ways is, are you comfortable in recognizing what you have in difference with each other? You're not ever going to have perfect alignment on all things. That's okay. There's friends who can't talk. We can't talk politics, and that's all right. But you know what? Over a decade, you begin to start to see more of why they believe mm-hmm. what they do on certain issues, you know? So it's a good question.
Can opposite sex friendships exist in the Christian life, and how should they be conducted?
Yes, that is a good question. We have talked a little bit about that in here, but I think those actually are crucial. I think that if you are married, obviously you want to talk with your spouse about what you're understanding about what those friendships look like. I think the scriptural standard is that people of the opposite sex are your brothers and sisters in Christ, depending on what sex you are, and you should treat them as such. So in a friendship with a woman, I will treat that woman as a sister. I have some really dear friends who are women who are married, and we have very deep friendships, but there is no element of anything inappropriate there. We also are careful about what contacts we get together. I would not invite one of those friends to go have a chat in my bedroom, for example. But I think that we learn from people of the opposite sex. And if you segregate yourself to only having friends of the same sex, you're missing out on a lot of what God desires for you.
Only thing I'd add, because we have talked about that multiple times, I think, is making wise decisions about how the friendship is going to take place, like, for instance, not being one-on-one in private settings, that sort of thing, that is not because the other person is, like, dangerous.
Right.
It's because your own heart is so prone to go in directions you don't want it to go. And I think that takes wisdom to name that, and I think there's a lot of the former kind of in the church today where people will say, oh, that nobody's really harmful. No, our own sinful hearts
right.
can lead us astray,
yeah.
and that's the motive behind
yeah.
it. One of the things I'm just going to ask you my own question now because I just decided to do that. The barrier, and it's kind of with that, although it has nothing to do with gender or sex. It's more about long distance. We were kind of talking about this earlier. I think that's one of the barriers. Is and you mentioned some of the things. How do you maintain friendships long distance in those seasons of life? Maybe that's a question on there, but I want to answer that one. I want to hear your answer, because I don't know how to do that well. And
yeah,
I think you do that well.
I think that is something that is really important, and it is a fact of the way life is now that very often people that you are very close to are going to end up living somewhere else. And I think one of the things that is really important to do if that happens is to talk about that before you end up in different places and talk about, well, okay, what are we going to do if we really believe that this friendship is a gift? Then how are we going to live into that? And what is that going to look like? And I think that conversation is probably 80% of the battle if you tackle that head on. I have a lot of friends who don't live here that I am still really close to. Like, some of my really dear friends live in England, and so obviously I'm not seeing them all the time. But I think part of maintaining and deepening those kinds of friendships is being upfront and talking about, I really value you you are dear to me. I see God's hand at work in this friendship, and I don't want to lose that. What I would love for us to do is to decide maybe once a month that we're going to talk by phone, or failing that, we're going to send each other an email with an update about one another's lives, what we can pray for. We're going to make a commitment to pray for one another, those kinds of things. I think if you do that, it can be really amazing. My wife is way better at this than I am, but she was in a Bible study before we got married 40-something years ago in Atlanta with seven women who all happened to be in Atlanta working as young single women. And they are still in touch today, and only two of them still live in Atlanta. But at least twice a year, they all fly in somewhere and spend the entire weekend talking with each other. They have a text prayer chain that they're on like every day. They are intimately connected with each other, and they make a commitment that they're gonna see each other at least twice a year.
So, yeah, that's helpful, thank you. Being upfront about expectations and realistic expectations and trying to live into those.
That are you planning to move?
Yeah, no, I'm not. All right, thank you for humoring my question.
Of course.
All right. Hugh?
How do you handle creating intentional and consistent conversations with friends who are not in your city or town?
That's what we just asked.
Yeah.
I knew it was in there.
How do you deal with...
Uh-oh.
You're on here.
How do you deal with good friends who are constantly bailing on plans?
Oh, that's such a good question. I have been there with that because I was the one who was bailing. And
you? Really?
Yes.
I don't believe that.
And fortunately, what happened is my friend said, you know, I have something I would love to talk to you about. And, you know, it seems like that we will make these plans and then things happen. And I understand when you're in the clergy that things come up and there's not anything you can do about it. But I'm not really sure that, I just don't feel like you have handled that very well in our relationship. And he was right. He was right. So I think one of the things you have to do is to bring it up and say, this is not okay. This is sort of a pattern that I'm seeing, and it hurts my feelings, which that's a very vulnerable thing to say, especially if you're a guy. It's just a very vulnerable thing to say, but it's the truth. And so it needs to be said, but it needs to be said in love. And sometimes there can be multiple reasons why that might be happening. It might be that somebody really genuinely does have things coming up. Another thing that sometimes can happen is they may have something going on in their life that they know is not good, and they don't want to get together with you because they know they're either going to lie or they're going to have to talk about it. And that requires some spiritual discernment. And if it's that latter thing, and I've had that experience too, you may have to just name that and say, you know, I feel like that you are avoiding me because there's something going on that you are either ashamed of or you don't want to talk about. And I just want to assure you that I love you, and whatever it is that you're dealing with, I want to like walk with you through that. And that usually will disarm people if you say that.
Yeah, usually. Sometimes but having the courage to name that it hurts and that you didn't like this and that you're observing a pattern. And it doesn't make you omniscient. It doesn't mean that you can see all the factors, but to bring it up is nonetheless important. And because you care about the friendship and you care about the other person, and that's important. Mm-hmm. So.
Practical ways to deal with bitterness towards a friend?
That's a good one. I think one of the most important things, if there is bitterness toward a friend, is to try to look objectively about why that bitterness exists, and to perhaps find an older and wiser counselor, a priest, or someone who's a mentor to sort of talk through the situation with. Sometimes we can feel bitterness that's maybe legitimate, and other times where it's not legitimate. If it's not legitimate, then the letting go of that is really a spiritual exercise, if you're a Christian, that involves a lot of prayer. I think whenever you're feeling bitterness, prayer is a good thing to engage in, not only prayer for the person to whom you feel that bitterness, but prayer for yourself, that you would have a wise and discerning heart about how to deal with that, and also to think about whether this may be a situation where you need to let it go and practice forgiveness.
I think, too, it depends on how I'd answer this question is if it's a valid concern of bitterness, and I think seeking wise counsel is really helpful to see if you've blown it out of proportion or if it's not really like a valid thing. But if it is valid and you haven't talked to the person about it,
yes,
that's probably important to do it. But if you have talked to them and you're finding yourself constantly tempted to be bitter and resentful, naming that, just being honest with yourself, talking to God about it. You read the Psalms, they're filled with honesty about the state of the psalmist's heart. And God's a big boy, he can handle that. So I think that's one of the things, going to God with how you're actually feeling. The only thing I'd add into what you said is actually praying for the blessing and expressing gratitude to God for the person that you're feeling bitterness toward. Mm-hmm. So if you can actually go in the opposite direction, it's not enough just to name it and let go, but to positively seek their good,
yes,
both in word and deed and in prayer, to pray for their blessing, to pray for to pray in gratitude to God for who they are and the unique things about them. That's one strategy for dealing with bitterness.
Yeah.
One more.
How should a husband and wife maintain their friendship?
Yeah, we did that one too.
What do you think that is the balance between hanging out with friends and spending time alone?
Ooh, that's a great one, Ed.
That is a great one. So I think that the question presupposes that you need to find a balance, and I think that is right. So hanging out with friends, that can mean a lot of different things. So hanging out with friends, if what you're doing is drinking shots on Upper King Street, that is a different kind of hanging out than if you are at a dinner party together. So there's a distinction there, but I think that typically one of the things that you want to do is you want to have about a one-to-one balance between group stuff and the individual stuff, because I think that it is way too easy to get stuck where you're in group settings all the time, which can be really fun and really entertaining, but you are not leaning into that one-on-one time. And the one-on-one time not only is necessary to build your friendship with those people one-on-one, but it will also enrich that group time the deeper that you go in those one-on-one relationships.
And the question was about being alone too, right? As opposed to group and individual stuff as well. Did I?
Right.
Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yes,
awesome.
So please add that.
Well, yeah. Just making sure. I've lost my train of thought like 5 times tonight. So I don't know if there's like an actual prescription for that. I think in many ways it depends on the person. You know, if it takes more time for you as an introvert to recover from just basically like being involved, whether it's in groups or individuals, that's okay. Plan that into your schedule. and recognize that you may actually need some time longer than others who are maybe more extroverted, who can just constantly go. And it may be, depending on where you are, you need to both honor the way God's made you, but challenge yourself to seek, you know, if you're introverted, to seek being around others both individually and in groups. And I think that's wise, the one-to-one groups and individual time. But I think if you're extroverted, it's wise also to find time and to challenge yourself to, I'm going to say no to these people, or I'm going to take one day and just
be alone
for the morning or something like that. And I'd be hesitant to say this is what you, like, the balance, but you're right. It is a balance in finding...
Because you need both.
Yeah, you need both time. You got to finish the quote that I asked you earlier, which is this very thing.
Right. So there's a great book by Dietrich Bonhoeffer that's called Life Together. And in it, one of his quotations is, "Let him who cannot be alone beware of community, and let him who cannot be in community beware of being alone." And the basic point is that we really need both of those things. We need time alone, but we also deeply need time in community. And if you're skewed all the way to one extreme or the other, that's going to be problematic.
Yeah, I think that's really, really helpful. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming out. We're going to be around. We'd love to continue the conversation. There's maybe some more pizza, and not sure if Clark's back there or not, but thank y'all for coming out. We'll be back in 2 weeks for another more specifically practical thing on friendship. So thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming.